Everybody, welcome to Game of Thrones.
Wait. I don't have a name. I don't have a name.
Well, you better get a name.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. We talked for a half hour. I forgot what I was going to do here. Okay.
That's not my fault.
And I'm the Human Torch. I don't know.
That's pretty good.
That would have been better than the one I have. Okay.
Okay. Well, then use it.
I'm not going to use it. Why don't you use it? You can use it.
You can't.
I'm not the one who does that. That's what you do.
It doesn't have the same impact if you do it that way.
All right.
So, are you ready?
Yes.
Oh, here we go. Everybody, welcome to Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. My name is Jay.
I'm Nick.
And my golden hand might as well be an anchor.
And welcome to the show. How's it going, guys?
Good.
Should have gone with Nick's, right?
Probably. I would have went with Nick's.
Well, that was my first thought when I saw someone sinking to the bottom.
It's true. Yeah. I wonder if the hand will fall off, if that's really what's weighing him down.
Well, he wasn't just float. You know, it's usually you float.
Yeah, but it wasn't the hand was like dragging back and, you know, sinking. What
was it, all the armor he had on, maybe? Because he was like falling at like a high rate of speed. I mean, he was like sinking fast.
I think it was more for dramatic effect, to be honest.
And how's the only way he's going to get up? He's going to have to drop the hand.
I'm sure Bronn will save him again.
Yeah, I think Bronn's. I mean, one, he already saved him, and then two, he'll just drag him back up.
What's crazy is, like, you know, if you look at the shot, he's on the horse. The water is only up to, not even to the knees of the horse, and then Bronn knocks him off, and then within what, 2 feet, all of a sudden it's just an abyss of a creek.
If you go to La Jolla Shores, you go to by Scripps Institute. That's how it is. You start walking out there. Well, it used to be that way.
It's not a large sandbar, I guess, in La Jolla and in here. So.
Yeah, so you walk, and then all of a sudden you're dropping, and luckily I have two hands, and one's not made out of gold.
So no fake news here. Jack verified it is possible to, you know, dive into an abyss right off of.
It is. Because it would shock you. You're walking out there, and all of a sudden,
but again, I think just one of those things. It's Hollywood, you know. Maybe a little suspend, you know, your disbelief, whatever. But
will he be alive? Is he dead? Is he alive?
Well, there's no way he's dead.
Let's save it for the actual discussion here on the episode. But a fantastic episode. Only 50 minutes, but it felt like a full 2-hour movie. Wow, not in a bad way, but like, wow, what an end to that episode. A lot of action in this episode. Again, it feels like if we had complaints that it was so slow, like it would take like 7 episodes, get to the penultimate episode, and then the action would happen. We're just getting like an episode 9 every single week, and it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, but like, you know, there's only one scene that I kind of was like, okay, this is dragging on a little bit. But there's also what they've done this entire season is they've done a lot of echoing or callbacks to previous seasons and dialogue or like shot for shot things. And to me, it's interesting, but it's a little too much fan service now. I'm like, okay, I'm kind of over it. I mean, I don't know if a lot of people pick up on it like I do, but it's just, I still enjoyed it. I think it's a great episode. It's just, I was just kind of like, okay, yeah, we've seen this. Move on.
Do you want to say that for what happens in the book stays in the book for Nick?
Yeah. That should be the instead of, because there's nothing left in the books, right?
So
it should
right. I don't.
It should
things that annoy
things that annoy Nick. This
things
episode.
That annoy Nick. This episode.
What annoyed Nick this episode?
That works.
I think that should be. I like it. So let's do it. Let's start it today. Let's start it today.
Now they're just gonna come out of my mouth when I think of them, but. There's nothing. All this episode had nothing to do with the books, and that's what's crazy about this episode in particular. It all was based off of storylines that are established in the show only. There's nothing really here book related in this entire episode.
So you think if it was book if this had been part of the book, you think the pond would have been bigger, deeper?
I think the pond would have been.
You think the horses would have been, hey, I can't swim.
I'm hoping that was a pond. I'm hoping that's not supposed to be the Blackwater, like the river, because like that would be embarrassing if that's supposed to be a river. But maybe it was.
You know, Nick is gradually turned into a 75-year-old man. Over the course of the podcast,
Jack rubs off on me.
It could have been like Deadwood, because the fair through in Deadwood, it never. You watch one episode of Deadwood, it never rains. yet it's always wet.
Oh, it's a whole other reason.
Well, I'm just saying, maybe you had a lot of troops there.
Oh God, no. Okay, so before
where would you? You don't just you got to have one central location where people can go, but right?
You're being ridiculous. All right, let's before we
Nick, wait, Nick, am I being ridiculous?
Yes, you are. You're saying that all of those army people peed into like one location and it created a big pond. Really?
Well, I'm just saying. Look at Watch Deadwood. But
if you want to talk about this podcast, jumping a shark, it just happened, ladies and gentlemen.
If I'm Jaime Lannister, mm-hmm. if I'm in charge, I go, no, we're not going to just do it wherever you want. We're going to have one central location.
Yes, you build
guys.
Like latrines and like troughs.
What do you mean build latrines? They're marching. Come on.
You know, maybe that pool was just Jaime soiling his armor, you know, and he just.
All right. Before we get anything, and now that we've lost all of our listeners, we want to thank the people that make this show possible, our listeners. All of the podcasts on the Jay and Jack Network are listener supported. Probably 97% of all the funds that go to all of our costs of doing the show, as well to all of our podcasters, comes from you, the listener. So thank you so much. You can help support the show by going to patreon.com/JayandJack, or just go to jayandjack.com and click on the Become a Patron link today. You can contribute $1 all the way up to as much gold that was in Bronze satchel or sack, which still wasn't enough for him.
I'll tell you right now. You give us what was in that sack. Was probably how much you think was in there, gold wise.
Well, gold
in today's value. God, yeah. I mean that was.
What's a thousand? Was it $1,500 an ounce?
An ounce, yeah. That's. I mean, you saw Jaime pick it up. I mean, it was a good chunk of weight. So, what do you think? Probably 6-7 pounds or more of
that's
gold.
More than that. Like, wait, he lifted it. And he's a strong guy. I would think like maybe 20 pounds, 25-30 pounds. So how many ounces are in a pound? Doing math live on the podcast.
16. Or is that just for meat?
That's fine. We'll go by meat standards. So 16 times. How many pounds do we want to say? 25 pounds?
25 pounds.
So we'll say 25 pounds. So that's 400 ounces. So 400 times 1,500. That's $600,000 if it's 25 Ooh. Pounds.
All right, so $600,000. If someone donates $600,000, the crew of the Ramblecast will help build your own pond.
But say it was like 45 pounds, he's looking at a cool million.
They might not want that pond that you're building, Jack.
Well, I'm just saying, Chris can bring the Corona Light. That would help. Mm-hmm.
All right. True. Well, you just have to put that in there. You don't know the difference.
and I'd like to thank our sponsor Corona for making this podcast and other podcasts on the JJack Podcasting Network possible. Thank you for Coronas.
All right, well, let's jump into this recap. Nick, let's take it away.
Yeah, well, we kind of already covered the opening. So we see Highgarden is where we start off, of just them leaving the area. And then Bronn, you know, he's not really complaining yet, but, you know, you see Jaime get the bag of gold out. Yeah, and he's like, and the castle. You offered me a castle.
Well, he was promised a castle.
Is
he wrong for complaining?
No. I don't blame him either, because it's like, you know, you could be dead any minute, you know, because you're at war. And it's like, I want what's coming to me. And even think about it. He's been going – he was with Tyrion, and now he's with Jaime. And it's like he still hasn't really gotten anything that's owed to him. And the Lannister keeps saying, you know, the Lannister always pays your debts. And it's like, well, it's time to start paying up, buddy.
But didn't Jaime make a good point? He goes, okay, you know what the upkeep on a castle is?
Right.
And he goes, plus, he goes, would it be better if we secure, if we win? Wait till we win? And
well, he does it.
Get your choice of any castle you want, because if they don't win, how long is Bronn going to be able to keep the castle by himself?
Right. But that was a good thing that Jaime says, that when the war is over, you can choose any castle you want. So I was like, that'd be like, score!
But how does, I mean, if they don't win, say the Lannisters lose, he's not going to be able to secure that castle by himself, Bronn.
True. But then you have to
take the money and go somewhere, Bronn. Enjoy life.
But he's also, you know, he's also friends with Tyrion, too. So he does have a little...
Yeah, I guess he's worked both sides, yeah.
Yeah, so he could still kind of go like, Tyrion, you know, throw a dog a bone. You know, a little something for the effort.
Remember that time I saved your life like 7 times?
Yeah, come on.
You kind of owe me.
Just a little bit.
Is Bronn the wisest player in the Game of Thrones?
Does he end up on the throne?
interesting.
What's his odds? What's Bronze odds of sitting on the Iron
Throne?
Okay,
if we put it out to a public vote, I think he'd win because I think he's the kind of guy you'd want on the throne.
Well, I would say he's the cockroach out of all of them, right? Like, he's just like, for some reason, he'll still be there at the end. Like, he'll just somehow.
Well, he's a survivor. He's a great fighter.
If he was going to die in an episode, I feel like this episode would have been the episode he dies in, and he still survived. Well, we assume he survived.
Those poor horses. No, but
he didn't seem to be sinking as fast as.
Well, we don't know for sure if that was Bronn. I assume it was Bronn. To me, it was either Bronn or
the other guy,
Tarly.
Dickon.
Yeah, Dickon.
But like, thing is,
come on, Bronn's face when he said it.
Dickon, like, what? Who named you that? But no, if you look at the shot, the guy who, granted, you don't see his face, but he's wearing full leather, which is what Bronn usually wears, whereas in Dickon was wearing armor.
True, that's true.
I mean, it's funny, like, who names your kid Dickon?
Your father must be a real Richard. but yeah, I mean, I feel for Bronn, but I feel like, I don't know, I think Bronn's going to be okay in the end. He just needs to wait out a little bit.
But, you know,
who couldn't be called Dickon?
Aww.
What? Aww. Too soon?
Theon.
No, not really. Right. Poor Theon.
So he would be Dickon?
That's how Jon Snow should have been. Hey, what's up, Dickon? Oh, sorry.
All right.
Could be Grey Worm, too.
We don't have a show with Grey Worm. Okay, we talked about that last week. I don't want to probably dig into it again, but Nick, let's move on from this scene.
All right, well,
this has turned into a Ramblecast After Dark. I apologize.
One little bit here at the end of that scene was, you know, Lord Tarly walks up and says, you know, that the wheat needs to be moved, needs to be sped up, the harvest of that, so they can move all the food into King's Landing. So Jaime orders Bronn to help speed up the process. Yes. And then, King's Landing.
He called him Sir Bronn.
He did, because he is a knight.
That's why I thought that was pretty respectful. Yeah. I do like the way they work together. But he plays well with Tyrion, too.
Yeah, I mean, he's done a great job. I don't really have any complaints about any of the actors on this show. I mean, they've done a great job.
When are we going to see Bronn and Cersei together?
Never. Ever. Which leads, you know, like, so now they're going to be heading back into King's Landing, you assume, this next episode. And so, like, what's going to happen? Does Cersei end up being dethroned in this next episode?
They don't even have to have a scene. He could just be standing there and she's standing there. They don't have to have interaction with each other.
It's just, it's the tension.
Yeah.
Anyway.
For anyone who doesn't know out there, the actor who plays Bronn dated the actress who plays Cersei in real life, and they have like a in their contract, I think, now that they can't be together because they hate each other.
But it's you're a writer. Okay, oh, this would be Jaime comes into King's Landing with Bronn. Oh, wait, Bronn's gonna go to the bathroom.
No, he goes and actually gets his castle or whatever. It's fine, or he goes to a brothel or something.
Yeah, okay, all right.
I see a lot of ways I could write that into the thing, but
as a writer though, I would say no. We got to have a scene with you two together.
Yeah, well, he's just what does he call himself? A jump start, you know, knight
upstart.
Or whatever.
Upstart.
You know, so he's a lowly knight at that. So he might not warrant a audience with the queen. But speaking of Cersei, you know, it does cut to a very short scene with Cersei and the representative from the Iron Bank, and Mycroft from Sherlock. And if you ever watch, if anyone out there watches Sherlock, you cannot see this actor without not seeing.
Well, Colleen, I was fine with it, but Colleen's like, I can't. I just it almost takes me out of it with him in it because he's just so identified with that other character. Do you guys have that problem, or me? I'm just like, yeah, it's fine.
No, I see it, but it's a good. He's a great actor, so it doesn't bother me.
Yeah, I think it's because he still kind of has that same demeanor, and he didn't really change his voice that much. So I think if he actually tried to do it in a slightly different British accent or something, I might see him as a different character. I still see him as a different character, but I still see him as Mycroft.
Yeah, he is playing it very similarly. That is true. His facial expressions are very similar to his Mike Croft character.
So we were saying lazy acting? Is that what we're saying?
maybe that's what the directors want. I mean, they may just want, we want you to be like Mike Croft. I mean, we don't know.
That's true. It is kind of on the director and the actor. But yeah,
maybe he's got going, you didn't pay me enough to be a different character. So there. I was promised a castle, so this is what you're getting.
But so he's impressed with how quickly that Cersei was able to pay off the debt, because this is just a huge amount of money. Which this is one of those things that, you know, since I'll get into rants, this is another one of those things that makes no sense, because the Reach is not known for gold. So why does the Reach have a lot of gold? And it's just as absurd as saying Castry Rock is out of gold. And so but anyway, it makes sense.
Do you think it's just to service the storyline? Is that your problem with it?
Yes, it's to service that's actually one of my issues with this episode. That I don't have many, but it's that there's a lot of things that are written in this season that are just, they wrote something early on and they just like hammering that bent nail, like, oh, here's the time to hit it, you know, and like they just did it. And this is one of those things where it's like, oh, like, why does the Reach have gold? Okay, it's just to send the army somewhere and let them conquer it to give it to the Iron Bank. But anyway, I mean, it's a little nitpicking thing. I mean, it still works for the story.
What would happen if
would they have not had gold there? I mean, are they well known for their wealth?
They're not known for that. You know, like, exactly. Like, Castry Rock is known for gold. The Reach is known for farming. You know, Dorne is known for sand and wine. You know, the Baratheon, which is Stormlands, is known for rain and trees, you know, lumber, things like that.
Well, when you sell your products, you sell your lumber, you sell your wine, how are they paid?
Right. It's true. It's true. But, I mean, this is a lot of gold. I mean, it's not like it was just... This is
paying back not only the debts of, since we've seen the show, but like the 20 years of Baratheon racking up debts, right?
And
from my understanding, he racked up tons of debt as king.
Right.
Now, what would happen if Cersei said, "We're not paying you back"?
Well, then, like, you know, there's nothing they really could do. But
they could then fund and support who would ever take them over to get the money, right?
They could
say, "We want to back Dany."
They could, but I don't think that would happen, because, like I said, last podcast we did, is that the Braavos was founded by escaped slaves and who were escaping Valyria. And so they're weary of Targaryens, knowing that Targaryens came from there with dragons. And so they don't want to support them. And, you know, and actually, you know, and Cersei made a good point to him, too. Is like, what are the odds of a conqueror actually repaying debt from Robert or from me? It's like they're not gonna repay you for a debt they didn't make.
Right.
Yeah,
I'm just saying,
fair.
if she chose, say, look, I'm not gonna pay you.
Yeah.
But my thing would be like, well, okay, sure, the whole slave, but she's freed all these slaves. So, but I get it, because even John doesn't trust her because of everything that her, you know, father did. So,
but technically, right now they haven't paid the loan back. They have the gold, but they haven't.
Well, that's
delivered.
That's what he's saying, and you know. If you bring the gold back.
Yeah. And as we see, it might have been a problem, an issue towards the end.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get into it. It's there.
But, I mean, he's so impressed, though, that the debt was paid back that he suggests a new investment now. Because it's like, oh, now that you paid it off, we still want interest from you. So, like, let's make another. And Cersei...
Do you have a credit card?
Yeah.
0% the first year.
Yeah, first year.
Then it balloons to 29%. But read the fine print.
But Cersei says, we need to expand our armies and our navy. And this is an interesting note that she said that Qyburn had made requests to the Golden Company. Now, the Golden Company plays a bit of a minor role in book, a little bit in 4 and 5, but they're still not like a main thing. But they've only been mentioned in the show. And the Golden Company is just it's the most infamous sellswords in Essos, and they were famous for never having broken a contract once they make it. But the thing is, what's strange is, I mean, this is it's a total departure from the books. Like, this has nothing at all, because they're in a different area now in the books. But But what's interesting is that the Golden Company was founded by Aegor Rivers, who was a bastard Targaryen 200 years before what's happening right now. And so I think it's interesting. It's like, oh, we're going to hire this sellsword company that was founded by a Targaryen. So I don't know if this will have.
So is
any
that kind of like a you don't know what that means kind of thing? Using that as a reference.
Yeah, like it's just one of those things that, like, I don't know if they'll get their support or not. I mean, anything could happen in the show. I mean, she could not get their contract. They could get their contract and they could betray them. I mean, anything could happen. But I just think it's an interesting tidbit of why did they throw this back in all of a sudden, you know, to get these people. And then also another thing she says right there at the end was, you know, I need them to help me recover some things that belong to me. And that's really an interesting, like, what does she lose?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, all of her kids are gone. So, like, is she just going to, like, maybe hire them to get Tyrion? Or
what else does she have out there she wants?
Right.
Huh. Well, Tyrion, does she really? She just wants to kill Tyrion.
Right. But I'm just trying to think. I was just racking my brain trying to think what is it she lost that she's trying to get a hold of? Because, I mean, I can't think of anything else.
No.
Maybe it's got to be it's revenge, maybe. But
yeah, there's nothing material that she really wants.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny though, because, you know, Jaime hasn't seen Cersei yet, but we know now that Jaime knows that it wasn't Tyrion who killed Joffrey.
Right.
But I mean, I'm pretty certain, because Cersei's always hated Tyrion, so I don't think she'll even care. Like, she wants him dead regardless.
Well, plus Tyrion killed her dad, so
that's true.
That,
but he was kind of justified because he didn't do it, and his dad was kind of going to let him die anyway.
But Cersei doesn't, like Nick said, she's always hated Tyrion because she blames him for her mother's death.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and then on to Winterfell. There's a lot of interesting stuff that happened here, which is good, but like. The first thing we see is Littlefinger presenting Bran with a Valyrian steel dagger, the same one that tried to kill him in season one. And Littlefinger, of course, is being Littlefinger in his mysterious ways. You know, like,
this is very important because they were going to kill you with this, and
I found it.
Exactly. Like, I wish I could be there, like, for your mother, but I always will be there for you, you know, and like, it's just.
I would have died for your mother, not your dad.
Yeah. Well, actually, I kind of killed your dad.
I kind of killed your dad.
But you already know that because you can see everything.
Okay. Yeah. That's where I was like, I was hoping Bran, a.k.a. the three-eyed raven, because he's being a big weirdo, so we just call him three-eyed raven. Why wouldn't he just call him out? Because he knows, he has to know that it was Littlefinger that actually gave the blade to kill him.
Right.
That was too much for the episode.
And this is one of those things that also kind of sometimes confuses me when it comes to Bran, because supposedly where they can see things are where weirwood trees are. You know, the white trees with the faces on them. And that's what they're looking through, is that they're seeing things that the trees have seen. And there's not really a lot of these trees in the south, because they were all cut down. For people that came later after the First Men. And so
he may not know?
He might not know those things because it's so far south. But then
he did look like he didn't trust him, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but then it showed, though, like, later when he re-quotes him, later in the scene, with the whole chaos of the ladder.
Ladder, yeah.
So he has seen things inside the Red Keep. So that's something the show kind of picks and chooses what Bran has seen, whereas in the books it might not be that way.
Okay.
So it's a little bit confusing sometimes for me. But what was interesting, though, is that when he gives him the dagger, Bran says, "Did you know who this belonged to?" And I think most people will take it at face value is that he's asking, you know, did it belong to Joffrey, or did it belong to Tyrion, or did it belong to someone in the present time? But I kind of wondered if he was thinking, who did it originally belong to? Like, you know, what? Like, what Targaryen did it belong to? Like, did you know where this knife originated from? But that was just me thinking, you know, abstractly, going like, oh, maybe it's a deeper question. Because Bran is kind of one-dimensional now and is acting and just...
I would say, you were talking about, like, complaining about acting before, but I understand maybe it's the character, but it is a little, I don't know, weird or off-putting.
You're just saying, hey, I'm not bringing this guy along to a party.
Yeah.
He's a party killer.
So is it the acting or is it the way the three-eyed Raven's supposed to be? Like, I defer to your judgment here.
Well, okay, so the original three-eyed Raven that we had seen, who was played by two different actors, is Brendan Rivers, who is also a Targaryen bastard. He was called Lord Bloodraven, and that was his famous saying, is how many eyes does Lord Bloodraven have? 1,001, because remember he only had one eye? And they only showed that in that one season where he had one eye. I think with Max, they left him with both eyes. But and that's what I mean. Like, it's because, you know, when you start seeing all these things, your life, you're living through all these stories and all these timelines, so you do get lost in it all. And I think that's even what he was kind of warning them about, like last season or season before, is that don't stay in there too long because you'll never come back. And I think Bran is experiencing that, and that he's just becoming, because think about it, if you knew your life, if you knew when you were going to die, or you knew everything had happened, there's no need for emotion anymore. It's kind of like that movie that happened, The Arrival, you know, like your emotions kind of go away.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not only that, look what he's been through.
Yeah.
I mean, he lost his mom, lost his dad, lost his brothers.
Okay.
He was pushed off a tower, and because, you know, he saw a brother and sister having, you know, something.
But I think it has less to do with the trauma, and because if you look at, because this is Winterfell, it's the reunion of all the Starks that save for Jon, the named Starks. They've been through hell too, and they're not the same. So it's clearly the experience of being the three-eyed Raven.
I think that's all, but also that he also suffered at a young age. You look at Sansa and Arya. They're not.
Oh, I know, but I'm saying Bran is excessive. So it's obvious that being the three-eyed Raven is probably like too much.
Well, I think
emotionally driven acting.
I think he's acting it the way they want him to act it.
Oh, absolutely,
sure.
Because he was always good before. I mean, so why would he be a terrible actor as he got older?
Oh, he's not doing a terrible. I just meant that, you know. It's scary, not scary, but it's just odd because he's so lifeless now that it's odd to see a scene like that. I mean, he actually gave Arya a hug instead of Sansa, or he just kind of left her going like, why are you touching me?
Well, Don, do you think that Arya, the reason he gave Arya a hug, because you look at Sansa, maybe he knows, remember how Sansa was treating Ned Stark, her dad, before he got, you know, head mm-hmm. chopped off. She wasn't very nice to him. Right?
Well, yeah.
I mean, she was a typical teenager. Maybe he's seen that.
I'd be really petty if he's going to hold a teenager accountable to being a teenager.
Well, she was a bit of a drama queen.
She wasn't even
queen yet. So
I'm not going to, because I have a three-nager right now, and frankly, he's worse than Sansa. So.
But I don't know. I'm just saying. Maybe he blames Sansa for their dad's death.
Again, I think that he doesn't have emotion. He's not going to hold on to petty things like that because he's on a plane that's completely different than all those tropes
Sansa was definitely upset that Bran gave her Arya a little more love than her. Would you agree? Would you agree?
Well, I mean, Sansa is a complicated character in that you have to look at it from her point of view. Her half-brother, who she's always hated more in the books than the show, is now the King of the North, and he kind of just gave her now the title. She sees her sister come back, who's now a badass swordsman. And, you know, her brother was King of the North. Her other brother was. You know, Bran can see visions in the future and the past. And then what can she do? I mean, she doesn't have any of the powers that any of them do.
Well, you think that's that scene that where Arya's fighting,
right?
And you see Sansa looking at her with butterfingers there, little fingers there.
Butterfingers.
I couldn't think of his name at first. But you look at that scene. You know, you think she's thinking, because remember they said they had that talk and they said, "Oh, it's my journey's been a long. You've been through a lot. I've been through a lot. Yeah, it's too much to tell." But in the end, Arya got what she wanted. She wanted to be a great fighter, a great warrior, a great. You know, she wanted to be good. That's what she wanted to be.
But
skilled.
So did Sansa.
Yeah, so did Sansa.
In a way,
she's
Sansa wanted to be queen.
But she wanted to be queen, and now she's just basically, well, John, you know, my half brother gave me this.
Yeah, but
position
that's
now.
I don't know if John's going to come back. I mean, from their perspective, probably like, well, he's an idiot. He's going to be killed by her. So,
but I think at that point she's looking. She goes, well, she got what she wanted. I wanted to be queen. I just wanted to be queen. I don't think she wanted to be leader. I think she just wanted to be queen.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, Sansa isn't the same, you know, young kind of childish person she was in the first season. So I don't think queen. Meh.
But what do we think of that scene? She wasn't looking like, oh my god, look at how she can fight.
I think she was honestly a little bit like scared. Like, dang, she's like a murderer now. Oh yeah, she's like, that list is real. Like,
I took it more as being jealous.
I didn't see jealousy.
Because the way she looked was like,
I did not see jealousy. I saw like disconcern. Whoa, my sister is not my sister anymore kind of feeling.
Exactly. That's the look, because she gives her that look twice in this episode.
But they never got along, though.
They didn't. I mean, they were polar opposites of sisters, which a lot of sisters and siblings are. But like, I think it was more of like, who are you? Like, you're not that person that I thought you were.
I could go with that, but I just go with the whole, you know, they look at their lives, how they wanted to go. And Arya, you can argue, even though it was a rough road for her, she got, you see in that scene, she is what she wanted to be.
I feel mm-hmm. like that's a little too, like, you know, 80s sitcom Growing Pains problems, like the therapy TikTok. I feel like it's a little bit more complicated than that, personally, but that's just me.
Maybe in the last 2 minutes they can end it and everybody be happy.
Listeners, what do you think at home? Is Jack right, or are Nick and I right? Please give us a call, 385-309-0311, or send an email to GameOfThronesPodcast@gmail.com.
Or we have the other one, jacksright@gmail.com.
Ghost town in that email.
What I wanted to talk about, though, with this, though, still with Littlefinger and Bran, is that it's really interesting in what's going on here, even though it's subtle, but it's just Littlefinger thrives on chaos. And this is what he's doing. He's trying to manipulate Bran by giving him this dagger and building up his courage, because that's what he's saying to him, is that, like, you know, you've been through so much. You know, you've been a cripple, you've been attempted murdered, you know, like, imagine the journey you've had, you know, and then to come back to this chaos. And that's when Bran interrupts him by saying, chaos is a ladder, which is what Littlefinger said to Varys back in season 3. And what's interesting about this, though, is that if you guys remember this scene, is that Littlefinger's looking at the Iron Throne. And then Varys walks up and says, like, oh, I imagine you see yourself sitting up there one day. And he's like, you know, indeed I do, you know. And then he goes, it's just a reminder that, you know, it's not even 1,000 swords. You know, it's all a lie. And then Varys is like, well, without the lie, you know, what will we descend? What will you fall into? You know, a pit of chaos, you know. And then he says, chaos is a ladder. And this is where Littlefinger really reveals himself, as in his motivations, is that he loves creating chaos to get his own way. And that's what he's done since season 1. You know, he started this lie about this dagger to Catelyn, saying that it belonged to Tyrion, which set this whole events in motion of saying, like, Tyrion's behind the attempt to murder my son, which we know is not true. Joffrey tried to do it. So that's what he does. He tries to get the people at the top to topple themselves. And that's the whole quote that Littlefinger says, is that many try to climb this ladder, but once they fall, they're too scared to pick themselves back up again. And so that leaves him to keep climbing. And so then in a way, Bran is telling Littlefinger he already knows he's full of it. You know, like, just by saying it's a ladder. Chaos is a ladder.
So we assume if Bran knows that, then he knows that Littlefinger was behind the death of his father.
Most likely, Bran probably does. But, I mean, you have to think, though, Bran's not going to reveal all this, because he probably is looking at the big picture, though.
Right. Like, yeah, it's a smart play.
Yeah. It's like, it probably was necessary for his father to die, now that he thinks about it. You know, it's like, it was in order for all things to happen, in his mind, he's probably thinking, oh, well, it was necessary for my dad to die in order for this outcome that he possibly could see into the future.
At least to have six more seasons.
Also with this scene, it kind of came to my mind, like, has Littlefinger lost his mojo? Because I feel like he hasn't been control since he came in and kind of saved the day in the Battle of the Bastards. Like, is he just on a... Is he falling off that chaos ladder right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of producers not knowing how to write Littlefinger. And then, yeah, exactly. I think Littlefinger is grasping at straws in a way, in that he's trying to position himself, because, you know, we all know what he wants. He wants to marry Sansa. That way he'll control Harrenhal, which is what he was given to by Joffrey. He already controls the Vale right now. And if he can somehow marry Sansa, he'll control the North. That's what I mean. Like, he wants to be king one day. So he's trying to position himself where he can undermine Bran and Arya so he can gain Sansa's trust. But you already see Sansa doesn't trust him anyway. She knows he's full of it. But he wants to maneuver that way. But like, that's what I mean.
Would Sansa marry him to gain what she wants?
It's very possible. I mean, that probably is his end game, you know, and that it's her and him as king and queen. But you see that in his face, though. Like, he's shocked by Bran and he's shocked by Arya. He sees how powerful they are and that they're not, you know, the dumb Ned Stark that he thought that he was. So,
They've experienced a lot, and trust is going to be an issue with them because everyone's broken their trust. Especially Sansa. How many times has she had her, you know, Joffrey and all the other stuff go on that she's been through? And then, but you still think that she married, you know, what's his name, Ramsay. I don't know how the guy's still alive, to be honest with you.
Well, you kind of wonder if Arya will kill him, you know.
She did have the death stare.
Well, I did, this is why I need Nick to watch the show with me. He's like, is he on the list? I don't think he's on the list. Is he on the list? Because there's definitely like stares between the two of them where like there's this the terror in Littlefinger's face and just the I'm going to get you on Arya's face.
Right.
She could have said, you just made the list, buddy. And someone could have said, lighten up, Francis.
Well, I think it's confusing to her. It's like, you know, he was an important man down in King's Landing when she left.
Right.
And so it was like, why is he here? And then, I mean, she just doesn't trust him. And I don't blame her one bit.
Yeah.
But he's not on the list, though.
Okay. Yeah. I mean,
he definitely would be if she knew that he was behind, you know, her father's death.
Yeah.
What if Bran tells.
I thought when they actually had their meeting and he gave her the. That's when I thought Bran would have said that. And then that would have put him on the list for Arya. That's what I was thinking.
You think that he gave her the dagger so eventually she could use it on Littlefinger?
I mean, I think it
when he
come
when
into
he's
play.
When he's ready.
When who's ready?
When Bran's ready, to, you know, because you said Bran's making he's not showing his hand yet. Mm-hmm. But maybe he gave Arya the dagger to eventually say, you know, hey, Littlefinger's the one that...
This is where I would challenge that, is I really think Bran is beyond, like, you know, Machiavellian machinations. You know, he's got to do what he has to do, and I think it's beyond playing the Game of Thrones that Littlefinger and so many others are trying to do. So I don't think that's part of his... It's not his modus operandi right now.
I mean, it wouldn't shock me if he gave it to her because he knows that at some point in her future she'll need it.
Yeah,
will save her life. Right. But I don't think he's there to really play games. It's just that if she's in front of a White Walker or if somehow Littlefinger gets the best of her, you know, she'll need the dagger to save her own life.
Okay, I'll go with that. And what about the opening scene where Arya comes up to the gates and the two guards?
Yeah, that's where we're at right now. Okay. We've been all over the place, but still, it's like...
we're kind of just like our Winterfell discussion in one jumbo mix.
Oh, actually, we skipped one of the better scenes, though, too. So after Littlefinger leaves Bran, well, he didn't leave him, but like Mira Reed, which I know people love how I say Mira and Mira, it's the same word. Mira Reed enters, and she, of course, Bran already knows. He's like, "Oh, you're leaving." And she's like, "Yeah, I want to be with my family in case, you know, when the White Walkers come, I want to be with them." And he's like, "Okay." You know. Oh, actually, he says it more coldly than that. She's like, "You know, you don't need me anymore." And he's like, "No, I don't." And it's like, dang, she just drug you like hundreds of miles. And you're like, "Yeah, I don't need you." But what was interesting is I thought this was a really good scene because it emphasized his departure from being Bran. You know, because he even says that, like, "I'm not Bran anymore. I remember him, but I remember so much else now." And she just says, "You died in that cave."
Yeah.
And I thought that was really just a good kind of like hit to the audience of like, wow, like Bran really is not Bran anymore. You want him to be, but he's not.
Yep.
Yeah.
And just time and time again in this episode, since we've seen him come back, we see that he's not Bran anymore. They've hit us over the head with the fact that he is not that same kid.
Yeah, he's not really good at saying thank you either.
Ingrateful little kid.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Who's the greatest? Who's the best?
So, Nikki.
And then, yeah, now we're getting at Arya. And this is actually another. This was the one scene that I liked it, but I didn't like it at the same time when Arya gets to the gate. Because I liked it in that it's echoing season one. Yeah, season one. Where Arya is, you know, she's chasing the cats, and then she somehow gets outside the Red Keep, and she comes to the guards, and they won't let her in. And she's like, "My father is Ned Stark. He's the Hand of the King." And they're like, "You know, piss off. You know, like you're just some little poor kid from the gutters." You know, and so that's what I mean. It reflects that. It's another echo of like her dealing with the same thing again. But I felt that the scene just drug on a little too long. Of like. I wondered if it was another, you know, Ed Sheeran kind of thing. It was like, are any of these guys famous? Because, like, I really don't care about them debating with each other. Like, should we go get Sansa? Should we not go get Sansa?
I
was like,
well, I heard
get
there was
on
a Mets pitcher in the episode. I don't know who. I don't know, Syndergaard or what. I didn't know.
Yeah, he was part of the
Dothraki.
Okay.
But, you know, what got me that scene is, like, I don't want these two guys at the front gate.
Well, Arya said that to Sansa. You need better guards. She did say that.
They were like, it was like the Abbott Costello. I mean, he's just, come on.
Abbott.
I know I'm dating myself on that. I'm a bad boy.
But, you know, Arya does slip by them, though, and Sansa finds her down in the crypts looking at Ned's tomb, crypt, whatever you want to call it. It is a cute scene in the fact that they are sisters, because she kind of goes, "Do I have to call you Lady Stark now?" And then Sansa, instead of being like a typical sibling of saying like, "No, of course not," she goes, "Yes." You know, it's like,
I've earned it.
Yeah.
Bend the knee.
Yeah, bend the knee.
You don't bend the knee, we won't trust each other.
But, you know, and then skip over, you know, a few lines and things like that. But then, you know, Arya is curious. She's like, "They say you killed Joffrey." And then Sansa's like, "You know, I wish I had." And then Arya's like, "Me too." And I was so angry when I heard someone else had done it, because he was always first on my list. Yes. And this is, you know, this is the innocent scene, and the fact that when she says your list, and she goes, "Yeah, the list of all the people I'm going to kill." And then, of course, you know, why would you believe that your sibling has a list of people you're going to kill? Because it's crazy. So they kind of laugh it off. But then, you know, they go to Bran out in the Weirwood tree, and we've kind of talked about this, but then he says, "You know, I saw you at the crossroads," and Arya's surprised at that. And she goes, "And I thought," and this is where, like, you see this evidence that Bran doesn't know everything, because he said, "I thought you were going to go to King's Landing." So he doesn't know everything.
Right.
And then Sansa's, you know, like, "You know, what list?" She's like, "The list I'm going to, all the people I'm going to kill." It's like, oh my God. Like,
that wasn't a joke.
Excuse me. Am I in the list? Because I wasn't a really good sister with you, for you.
Yeah. And yeah, I kind of thought that too. Like, when, because, you know, like I said, they hadn't really gotten along. So I wondered if Sansa thought it too. It's like, who's all on your list? Am I on it?
Can I see
After the fight with Brienne of Tarth, definitely, like, am I on the list?
But anyone out there who wants to know who remains on Arya's list, I'll tell you. It's so you have Cersei, of course, for arranging Ned's death. You have the Mountain for the war crimes he committed at Harrenhal, you know, the rats to the chest, if people remember that back in season 2 or 3. Melisandre, or the Red Woman, as she calls her, for taking Gentry away from her. And then you have the three people that are now in the band without band, the Brothers Without Banners, which is Beric Dondarrion, Thoros of Myr, because they both sold Gentry to Melisandre, and then the Hound. But I don't really, and well, yes,
is, has the Hound been absolved of being on the list? I feel like he.
Yeah, I think yeah, because he she left him for dead, so I think that kind of makes them even.
And he,
but
did,
he's with the Men Without Banners now, so that actually kind of ties in to the list, right?
But he right. did take care of her several times.
Yeah, I think they're square. I think if she saw him, I don't think she'd kill him now. And then the last one's on her list, which is always funny to me, is Ilan Payne, who's the headsman in King's Landing. It's like he was just doing his job. I mean, yeah, he killed Ned, but still, I was like, you know,
I would go after him.
Okay.
I'm with Nick. He just was doing his job. He didn't want to kill him.
His job. Yeah, that's great. You're doing your job, but you killed my dad. Sorry. But, you killed an innocent man.
Yeah. But, you know, as we saw, like, it's all just kind of joking, and then Bran gives the dagger that Littlefinger gave him to Arya because it's a waste on him because he's a cripple. He can't use it. And that's the thing. Yeah, it made me think that she'll use it for good later on. And then we go to the cute scene that would have made anyone cry if someone just said, "Look, it's the Stark children." But yeah, you see all the children, see the children walking the grounds, you know, pushing them in the wheelchair, and it's just all so cute. And Brienne and Littlefinger are looking on, like you kind of. I mean, that actually was a cute little scene between Brienne and Pod. You know, him going like, "You know, you didn't fail, my lady," and she's like, "I'm not a," and then she's like, "Okay." Like she just kinda, I mean, I like that some of these characters are warming to each other. You know, it's a good little bit of levity.
Yeah.
And then on to Dragonstone. Missandei inquires to Dany about the Unsullied, and Dany takes note of her wearing, asking, "What exactly happened?" You know, because we'd all like
many things.
Yeah, great many things. Yeah, and then because we'd all want to know, what really happened in that room. And then, of course, moment killer, John, interrupt. Like, damn it, John! She was just about to say.
I'm Jon Snow.
I'm Jon Snow. I'm thick as a castle wall.
Yeah. Look, I think she's attractive, okay? But I just don't have time for that right now.
I don't ever smile. I could play the part of Ren.
Yeah. But John takes Dany down to see the mine, or the, what do you want to call it, the mountain of dragon glass. And, you know, which was pretty neat. But what was really funny to me, what I noticed was that these drawings that he shows her are very fresh. Did you guys know, like, they looked kind of like they had just recently been done? And I kept going, like, did John just go in there and, like, carve this stuff out, you know? And
I made the joke, too, because once they showed the way, I was like, oh, John just put it in there just to drive his point home.
Exactly. You know, like,
it's a smart move.
They've always been there. We've always been there. I just wanted Dany to go, like, you're so full of it. You just did this, didn't you? Like,
you still have the chisel in your hand, John.
Yeah, and he has little cuts and stuff. And
No, but because it ties into the whole the Children of the Forest,
right.
But because it's symbols that we've seen before, right. With you know all the dead bodies from the White Walkers using it.
Right. Yeah, we've seen the spirals like 3 or 4 times so far in the series, and even the producers don't really have said that they know what they mean. They're just something that ties back to the Children of the Forest, and somehow the White Walkers are adapting their culture, so somehow they're related. But
well,
it's just
the Forest created the White Walkers too, right? To kind of get rid of man, but it kind of went too far, you know.
But then that doesn't really make sense either. Well, I guess it does. You know, then John is saying like they fought together, you know, against their common enemy. But it's like, but then you created them, so
it's almost where you know, like the people that created the atomic bomb were like trying to create peace. You know, like actually didn't do that. You know, maybe that's kind of from the Children of the Forest perspective when they created the White Walkers.
We need another weapon that's better than that one.
Yeah.
Now, do you think that when they finally make the weapons, what kind you think they're like on tips of the arrows?
Yeah, that, but you know, they make them arrowheads, and then they'll make spears, so, but, and
Well, I would want to fight them a distance away, but I think the arrows would work better, wouldn't they?
They could hit them.
Yeah.
Well. Anyway, I was thinking about that.
But Danny, you know, Danny finally buys it and says that she'll agree to fight with John, and you're like, yay! But
if you bend the knee,
if you bend the knee,
come on,
let it go. But you know what was also another throwback? You guys probably may not have picked this up either. Is that this is almost verbatim the exact same conversation from season 5 that Jon Snow had with Mance Rayder, but it's from the opposite points of view.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's a good call out.
Because same thing, because she's like, bend the knee, and he's like, no, because my people trust me, they'll never accept a Southern leader. And that's exactly what Mance said to Jon Snow.
Oh wow.
And so it's like, wow, but, like you're seeing it.
But she did make a good point though.
Absolutely.
If you sell it, they'll buy it.
Yeah.
Couldn't you just done it in the caves? Okay, what if I do it here? Just you and I.
Yeah. No one will know.
I do it, keep it a secret. You know, I'm with you and everything like that.
Yeah. But they are kind of hitting us a little bit over the head with the whole potential marriage thing, because like neither one of them yield again. And if you guys didn't notice this, I didn't even notice that. Someone else pointed it out to me, that every episode this season, Danny has worn red, a red cloak to symbolize, or red or black to show her colors of her family. But in this episode, she wore gray, which is Stark colors.
Ah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I didn't
know. And so I was like, oh, that's interesting. So then, you know, like it's a good little scene. And they walk out, though, and Tyrion and Varys are waiting for them. And he's like, oh, we took Castry Rock. And she's like, that's good. And then.
So that's good news, right?
Naturally, they lost again, and so Dany's pretty mad. She has no allies now. It's just her and the Unsullied. And this was actually a really good point by Dany that I didn't even really think about, because you just naturally assume Tyrion is out for himself or for always the common good, is that Dany actually flipped it on him, saying, like, how do I know? Like, you're not – maybe you don't want to defeat your own family. And I was just like, wow, I was like, that's really a valid point.
I don't think it's that he doesn't want to defeat his family. I think when we see the scene where, I'm skipping ahead here, where he's, those are your people, I think those are his people.
Yeah.
I mean, he's fighting, he's turned against his own people. I think he is fighting that, even though they've never really accepted him, you know,
right.
But still it is his people. Maybe he's, you know, he's trying to do it without loss of life.
Right. Well, I mean, and also, like, you know, Varys and Tyrion are not military
strategists.
And that's their weakness. They're political people. They're, you know, they're common sense people. And Dany does the right thing in the fact that she finally, she first, you know, she does actually two brilliant things, you know, in the fact that she has her, she goes with her gut instinct at first, and then she looks at Jon and says, what's your advice? And I thought this was probably the smartest thing Jon Snow has ever said in this entire show, which was, you know, people believe in you and they follow you because they think, not verbatim here, people, but like, you know, because you have created miracles.
Right.
And that's why they like, and they think that maybe you can make their life a little bit better. But if you use the dragon to burn cities and burn people, then you're just as evil as the rest of them. And I was like, wow, I was like, that would really hit home with me, too, if I was in her situation. But she still chooses to be the dragon.
But she had to.
But she didn't, though, because she went after, like, a military target, not a civilian target. So I think she kind of did both. She did the military, which had to do, but
you don't have the collateral damage that happens a lot.
Exactly, exactly.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, she could have, though, like, you know, in my mind, she still could have just gone and burned the Red Keep, not the city. You know, just burn where Cersei is and that's it. You know, you could have even given the city warning if she wanted to, but she chose to do military.
But she's choosing, she at this point, she's listening to Tyrion.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't want that.
Right.
So, I mean, he'd rather starve them out than burn them out.
True. But you know, it's, I mean, skipping ahead a little bit here, but that's, it's one of the other things that kind of irked me was that later, during the battle, it's like, how did they get the Dothraki there? Because if you look at the map of where Dragonstone is and where the battle is,
you're killing the best scene in the episode.
Yeah, but like King's Landing is right in between the two. It's like, how did you get a whole army past the bay? You know, maybe, it doesn't make
maybe,
sense.
Maybe the dragons, they had like a big convoy and he just kept going back and forth. The three dragons brought him across, maybe?
Well, I kept thinking the whole time when Bronn's hearing somebody, I was like, oh, he's hearing three dragons fly towards them. But it's like, oh, wait, what the heck? There's a whole army? What? And just, I don't know.
well, we'll wait till we get to that scene.
Okay. But, okay, so going back to Winterfell, we see Brienne sparring with Podrick, and like normal, he's getting his butt handed to him. You'd think he'd learn after a couple of seasons. You know?
Well, he's gotten better, though.
He's gotten better. But, you know, he's not Arya good.
No, well, no.
But Arya interrupts and wants to spar with Brienne. And this is my favorite scene of the entire episode. It's not the best choreographed. There was definitely a couple of things that showed that it was, you know, there's a couple stops there, like for safety. Yeah. But I still enjoyed it a lot because you saw Arya remembering her or dancing from season one. And you also saw her using her faceless men skills as just in how to fight. And I just loved it. And the fact that Brienne was trying to be kind. And then Arya got the best of her so many times by just tapping her, going like, you know, you're dead. You're dead. But she didn't say it, but, you know, like, and then Brienne, I guess she gets so mad, she kicks the crap, you know, kicks her yeah. chest in pretty much. But I got a couple of things, but I'll let you guys talk.
No, I agree. I thought it was a fantastic scene. I liked it.
Well, to your point, though, it was cool seeing I know, Nick, it's going to be on your segment of things that ticked off Nick this week. But
I like that. Ticked off
Nick. Yeah, ticked off Nick. But yeah, I did enjoy the callback. I don't think you're wrong in making that your favorite scene from the episode.
It was my second favorite scene.
Okay. But what I liked also was at the end when it basically ends in a draw between the two of them, and Brienne's like, "Who taught you that?"
Yeah,
it's a dual meaning, you know, in that she says no one, and Brienne will believe that Arya just taught it to herself, right. But she actually means no one because she never knew their names; they were no one, and I just love that. It's like, oh, it's so clever. I don't know. And then, you know, naturally, we were talking about what you see Sansa and Littlefinger watching them, and both of them have different reactions to this. And that's when, you know, you wonder, like, did Arya just show Littlefinger her hand? And that, like, you know.
Don't mess.
She's a threat, essentially.
Yeah, she's a threat. And then, like, now Littlefinger sees what she can do. Because, like, Littlefinger might have just come at her himself, you know, or got one person to try to kill her in her sleep or something if this would have potentially happened. But now Littlefinger knows, like, oh, wow, she can beat Brienne.
Yeah,
good point.
But again, like, is she somewhat invincible at this point? Like, she took on the men with no faces. So, you know, does she even care?
Right. I mean, she took out the phrase.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
right.
But I mean, Littlefinger, like I said, like we said,
but
like,
is the hubris going to be her undoing? Is that the concern?
It's just a concern of, like, maybe in this one instant, you know, she was her arrogance, not really arrogance, but her wanting to kind of show off her skills to someone that she admired because she did beat the Hound, that this might have potentially bit her in the butt by doing this instead of being secretive, being. Letting people underestimate her,
but she is a Stark. So
that brings me to something that I've been seeing on the internet. She got rid of the phrase, but did she rescue her cousin or the guy? I thought that was a clever thing.
I think Nick had the right response because he's not there, right?
No, he's not there. He wasn't there. He's down River Run.
Okay, But he's still being held captive. She didn't just say.
He doesn't care.
Well, I don't know if he's captive, because the thing is that he was just used as ransom because he's married to a Frey. And right. We're talking about Edmund Tully.
Maybe his wife won't let him go out. No, you can't go.
Yeah, but he's Lord of the Riverrun now, so he's probably just back home because he was only kept as a hostage to ensure that the Tully forces would surrender to the Freys.
Okay.
And then they did, but then now the Freys are all dead, so it doesn't matter. He's back in power in Riverrun.
Okay, all right. Then I'm cool with that.
And then we have another little short scene, which was pretty neat. At first, I kind of thought it was, well, it is basically a throwaway scene, but it still has some interesting tidbits in it. And that, you know, you see John at Dragonstone, you have John and Davos walking. And what was interesting was nothing really they said, but it's just that you see John asking Davos some information, like, how many men in the north do we have now? 10,000 less? And then you see Davos say fewer. And then John goes, what? This has been said twice. And it shows that Davos remembers what Stannis taught him, is that Davos had always said this. He never had good grammar, because remember, he didn't know how to read, didn't know how to do things like that. And Stannis, in two different episodes, when someone said less, would say fewer. And so it's just showing that Davos remembers that saying less is not the correct grammar.
Huh.
And so he corrects and says fewer, and then Jon says what, which is what Davos had said in those two episodes, of not understanding that Stannis is telling him what. You know, that it's fewer, not less. I just thought it was interesting. Like, it's just a cool little throwback.
Right.
So
now Davos is what do they call him?
Grammar Nazi.
Grammar Nazi, there you go.
But also the other thing was that, you know, they see Missandei, and the only thing that's of note, really, that she's all the dialogue they talk about is that they kind of echo what Davos had said as well, about how the people chose Jon Snow, even though he was a bastard, is that Missandei says, all the people she freed, we chose Dany. You know, we chose her to be our queen.
Right.
So it's not, you know, we don't care about who her family is. We chose her. So it's interesting, the fact that they're both this duality of neither one of them.
You think that eventually Jon will bend the knee?
I don't think so. I think it's. I mean, they're pretty much hitting us over the head that even though they're aunt and nephew, they're kind of hitting us over the head that they're going to put them two together. It might not happen, but that's kind of seems like where they're going with the show, that they're going to get these two married. Because I mean, the North is a kingdom to itself, and Dany needs the North. So it's
what happens when they find out.
Well, Targaryens have been famous throughout history for marrying their siblings and cousins and things like that. So
okay, then it's cool.
Yeah, that's why, you know, that's what Cersei always made her case as well to Jaime about that. It's like, you know, the Targaryens have done it for hundreds of years, but we do it and we're shunned. You know, it's no. So I don't know. We'll see. I really don't think we're gonna get. It might happen, but I agree with George. I mean, George R. Martin has said it's going to be a bittersweet ending, so I don't see it being that PG-13 where John and Danny are holding hands and it's going to be one United Kingdom. I don't want that ending. So
who do you think eventually is going to sit on the throne? Who's going to be the
final? Well, we've had that a few times.
I know, but at the final episode, who's sitting on the throne?
I don't think the throne will exist. I really don't think it will. I don't think anyone will be the king or queen.
Okay.
It's all
for nothing.
Well, it's not all for nothing. I just think that it's going to be a brave new world. You know, it's going to be a restart. Because it makes no sense for the White Walkers to come down, which is basically a reset on humanity, for them just to keep the same institutions of government. You know, if you're going to restart the whole thing, restart the whole thing.
Yeah, I agree with Nick on that one.
If that's going to happen, then I would think Jon Snow's the one that would be the final survivor.
No, Jon Snow has a whole, I think we've talked about before, Gandalf the Grey, Gandalf the White. Since he came back, he's going to go off to finally get to die, or you know, this world doesn't belong to him.
I'm going to think Jon Snow's, he makes it to the end. Because he really doesn't want the power.
If you think Jack is right or wrong, give us a call at 385-309-0311. Give us your thoughts.
Or send an email to jackisright@gmail.com.
Whoever has that email is going to be like, what the what?
I'll see after if it's available.
Oh, man. Are we ready to get into the final sequence of events for this episode? Because we're an hour in here talking about this.
This has turned into a ramblecast.
Yeah, pretty much. But, yeah, it's good, though. But we got one little bit, like, you know, Theon does show up on the beach and in a very quick scene. And then John doesn't kill him because he helped save Sansa escape from Ramsay Bolton. And that's pretty much it.
Theon wasn't looking too happy there.
No, he wasn't.
I didn't know you were here.
Yeah.
I would have taken a different boat.
I would have actually tried to save my sister if I knew you were here.
How's it going, John? I hear you're doing pretty well for yourself.
Well, because Bran didn't get back before John left, right? Or no? Did he get back? John's seen Bran, right? Jon Snow?
John has not seen Bran.
Okay, does he still think Theon killed? No, because he saw Rickon.
Yeah, so he knows he lived. Yeah.
Okay, anyway.
We saw Rickon for a while.
That's right, yep. Well,
but Rickon did zigzag.
Serpentine!
He kept running straight.
And this episode we have Dick on, so let's go to the adventures of Dick on in Bran.
In our final scene.
From Theon to Dick on. There we go.
In our final scene that took up 20 whole minutes of the episode, which is a cool battle. I mean, the CGI was well spent on this.
Except the Dothraki being there totally took me out of it.
Well, okay, it's true. Cause like, okay, so
how did they get there so fast?
So yeah, Jaime and Bronn overseeing the wheat being moved into King's Landing, even though it's a good, you know, moving on the what is it called? The road. The Rose Road is what it's called. The road that goes from Highgarden to King's Landing. And then Lord Tully rides in to inform that all the gold has now made it to King's Landing safe, but they should hurry to get across the Blackwater before nightfall, which that indicates that they are south of King's Landing. So that's what I mean. Like, it's just that, okay, how did the Dothraki get there? It doesn't make sense geographically. But anyway, so Bronn here.
That's been an issue with you for like the last two seasons, though, right?
Well, yeah. it's an issue for a lot of people. I will say.
At what point you have to say, okay, I'm just going to let it go and accept it?
Should I start using flogging to help you guys speed up the podcast a little bit?
Well, as long as you warn us first, I think it's okay.
Hey, we got a lot of ground to cover. We've done it. So, okay. Okay, well, Bronn hears something, and this is where I thought it was going to be all three dragons. Like, oh, you're hearing like the wind flap, you know? And I was like, oh, because that would have made sense to me for Dany to come in with all three dragons, just burn them to a cinder, and then that would have been it. But it's like, no, then you had the army, which just threw me off. But
so is that a bad military move? Like, wouldn't it make more sense save your Dothraki and just use your dragons to?
But you see the Dothraki first, and you can see the soldiers. Were pissing their pants.
Oh yeah,
they were afraid even before they saw the dragon.
It was great cinematic effect. Don't get me wrong.
I mean, the fear in their face. You can see them shaking and all that stuff. It's like, mm-hmm. Well, these guys have won battle after battle, and here come the Rocky, and they're like, oh my god, we can't beat these guys.
I'm never gonna get tired of the shock that the actors have that they kind of portray when they see the dragons for the first time. It's so enjoyable every single time, and it was just as enjoyable this time with the Drogon showing up.
It was my favorite scene, but here's my tick off Nick thing.
No, you're Nick. Nitpick Nick.
Nitpick Nick. There you go. Wouldn't it have been better for Dany to come a different direction? Because they're all standing in a straight line. Like you said, she could have just mowed them all down. The dragon could have just burned. Instead of just burning
a lot of them.
She could have burned them all instead of burning just a little hole there. And like you said, this Raki put fear into them, but they wouldn't have had to lose a single Dothraki if they just would have burned the.
That's what I just said earlier.
No, but I said if she would have came a different direction.
Okay.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of things I thought were a bit weird for Dany, like because like Jaime tells Bronn to get the scorpion, which is the instrument they made for Cersei. And it made no sense for them to have the scorpion. It's like isn't that a bit heavy for an army that's on the move to lug around?
Yeah.
And then,
well, to be fair,
well, the thing is that
they know the dragons are out there.
Yeah, but think about it. Like what I just said, like geographically, there, King's Landing is right in between Dragonstone and where they're at. So it's like you left King's Landing with no army and now no scorpion. So like you basically left it defenseless.
Maybe they built another one.
Maybe. But then what was also silly was that once Dany sees the one spear or arrow go over her head, you know, the Dothraki pretty much have won the battle at this point. The Dothraki could have easily just swarmed that and taken it and not lost any lives or they didn't kill Bronn. Not that I want Bronn to die. But instead, she starts to attack it and gets her dragon hurt.
Foolishly.
So it's like, yeah, foolishly. Thank you for the grammar correction. And like,
thank you, Davis.
Yeah, it just made no sense to me for her to do that. It's like, why would you attack it when you've seen that this arrow can come at you like that?
I think it was she's pig-headed. It's like, you know, bend the knee to me. She's got a little bit of little hard-headed, and she's like, oh, I'll show you. And maybe she also said, I'm gonna take out that weapon also. But I agree. I didn't get the move.
Well, what if she came in at a different angle?
That's what I was saying. Come from behind,
coming from the side or the behind.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's my new original thought.
Less dramatic though.
But actually, what I liked about the scene was, even though the dragon CGI was extremely awesome, what I liked was seeing the soldiers like in Terminator 2 just fall
disintegrated. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, that is so awesome. Because, I mean, it's basically napalm, you know, that they're just getting hit with. And I was like, that is so
cool. Napalm in the morning. It smells like, I don't know, victory. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, you kind of dated yourself on that one, too. But.
Well, you know.
And then Tyrion is watching the battlefield from the high ground. And he observes, you know, the dragons and of course, and then he sees his brother, and I forget who put this up on the Facebook group, but it was definitely the most I laughed today was the fact that Jaime sees Drogon injured on the ground. He sees this opportunity to win the war with one stroke, you know, and try to kill Dany with a spear. So it's like, Jaime, horse, chick, spear, chick. Leroy Jenkins, you know, like, and I'm just gonna charge in and try to kill this dragon, like, or kill Dany, and God, it's so good. But like, I mean, yeah, all of it. I mean, I loved it because, like, you see, actually, what I love it about this scene, the whole scene entirely, was that for the first time I think ever on this show, you actually, as a viewer, felt what it feels like to be a book reader, and that you saw things from different perspectives, because you're rooting for Jaime, you're rooting for Bronn, you're rooting for Dany, and you're conflicted the entire time of who do you want to root for, because you have gotten to know these characters so much, you don't want any of them to die.
Right. I think a lot of people on Facebook and Twitter, that's what everyone's been saying, is like, I was torn. I mean, when you see Jaime going towards Dany, you're like going, no, but then you don't, like I said, I don't want either, because I'm drawing a blank on his name.
Bronn.
Well, I love Bronn. Bronn's probably one of my favorite
Dickon.
Characters. Dickon, no. Dickon yeah. Can die. I don't care. Oh, Jamie and Dany, neither one, I don't want to see either one of them die yet.
Right.
So you knew something had to happen. When the dragon turned around, you're like going, oh my God, he's going to die. But then Bronn comes in to save the day.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, the way they did it cinematically, though, like, they kept kind of playing that swelling orchestral music around Jaime. I was like, I wonder if this is how he goes. So just in terms of how they've even played up the scene, I thought they did it to where you really did think this was kind of Jaime's last stand. Where, you know, I understand on one hand from Tyrion saying, oh, what are you doing, you fool? But I also see it from Jaime's side. Like, if I kill her, this is it. We're done. You know, war over.
Yeah.
So I see it on both sides, but it was foolish, and luckily Bronn saved
King
the day.
Kingslayer is trying to kill the queen.
Maybe he'll add Queenslayer to his list. But also, I wonder if Bronn's going to ask for two castles now.
I think he deserves it. But what if Jaime is he was going down deep?
He's alive. Why do that just to kill him? Like, if he's just going to kill him, let the dragon, you know, burn him in a blaze of glory. He's not going to die by falling into the ocean. Something, he's going to be pulled up. He's probably going to be a prisoner of war. That's my guess. But
again,
well, I mean,
we can't. That, we, well, does
it
he,
makes?
Oh wait, or what does he turn? Does he if he's prisoner of war?
Does he turn?
Does he turn again?
Yeah,
join his brother.
It makes total sense because they're right there next to Dany for, you know, Bronn to save him, and then they're just taken prisoner. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's been my theory for the longest time, is that, you know, Jaime's the one who killed Cersei. It just makes sense. But we'll see.
When do you see, I lost my train of thought. Oh, would you, when Bronn said, he goes, hey, we should get out of here. And Jaime said, no, I think we can hold the line.
Yeah.
Should've well, you dumb.
He wasn't expecting dragons either.
Well, I don't think they could have been. If it was Dracky.
Yeah, once you saw the dragons, like, all right, I'm out. Drogon's there. I'm gone.
I got my gold.
Well, he dropped the sack of gold, and he's like, don't go. You're going to be dead. So he was smart, at least, and, you know, ran away.
He's greedy, but he's not stupid.
But that's it.
All right. Well, overall, gentlemen, any nitpicks, Nick, before we – or did you truly enjoy the episode?
I think I got them all out.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
My nitpick – I think the dragon flies too fast. I don't think it can keep that.
Well, okay. Here's another nitpick.
I'm just kidding.
Jack, we had him. We closed the book. Now it's open back up again.
It's not really a nitpick in that. Okay, how does Dany stay on the dragon? Because she's just holding on by a couple spikes in his back, and this thing is flying fast and, you know, rolls and all something like that.
She has strong thighs.
Well, you think that Tyrion would build her a saddle or something. I mean, he made one for Bran back in season 2.
But it'd have to be made out of, like, dragon glass, right? Because it would just burn, right? It would just incinerate.
But in the prequel books that are more of a history, they all have saddles, the Targaryens. So
my pointing out how fast a dragon goes does make got your nitpick, Nick.
Yeah.
All right. But overall, I thought it was a fantastic episode. It was like a movie. I mean, they're all kind of movie like, but it was
kind of like Lord of the Rings.
You didn't like Lord of the Rings.
Great up until the end, and you don't get a conclusion.
Jack only watched the first one, ladies and gentlemen. He didn't even finish the series. So
I watched the second half, second one, but fell asleep.
You have
all
no
you need
place
to know,
here.
All you need to know is the Eagles always save the day.
That's true. All right. That's what we thought. Now it's time to get to what you guys thought. Times for listener feedback. Here we go.
Listener feedback.
All right, it's listener feedback time. Got a decent amount of emails. This inspired you all to write in, so thank you. So first, we'll just start with the emails, and then we got a phone call as well. This one is from Joanne. Jay, Jack, and Nick. As I was the first person in the patron pages to post a wow for the episode on Sunday, and not just the battle. The whole show was fantastic. My feelings on how good the episode was is pretty obvious, and I'm sure you'll have a lot to discuss and hopefully others' feedback to read. So let me step back for a big picture discussion. I cannot imagine the pressure and difficulty of being a writer on a major TV show nowadays. For some history, I remember Star Trek as the first major fan-obsessed show. We did not have the internets, but there were courses on Vulcan, and it was one, if not the first show, to have conventions dedicated to it. Fast forward to Lost, where crazy fans hosted podcasts, and even crazier fans like me waited impatiently for those podcasts to analyze every move made and nitpick. Hey, nitpick Nick, at every inconsistency, no matter how trite. And the theories, some might even say they were crackpots, but they abounded. And now we have Game of Thrones, inarguably the most fan-obsessed show on TV right now. The amount of fan chatter about whether a word in a prophecy meant male or female was Lost-like, and even Star Trek Vulcan translation debates in its intensity over a minor plot point. Bottom line. You have a small group of writers getting together to try and write the best material they can in a short time. They have a lot less time than George is taking in writing his books. And millions of fans ready to argue over every word, gesture, look, etc. All of this makes the success of an episode like this week's all the more amazing. I'm sure there will be issues noted, and of course, the time and travel jumps were there again. But it is impressive how well the writers, director, staff, CGIers, and everyone else associated with this show can put together a week-to-week pure entertainment show. Joanne.
I agree. I mean, that's a great email.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I mean, I'm entertained every week. It's just, but I do nitpick.
But the pressure is on the writers to come up with a story that, you know, people aren't going to just completely tear apart. So now but the hats off to them. They I thought they pulled it off this week.
I agree. No matter what Nick says. All right, next email. Dragons, yay! is the title of the email. Hi, guys. I have no real insight to offer than that I found myself yelling in delight. I may have even shed a happy tear as Danny scorched in the Dothraki scorched and annihilated the Lannisters. I've always enjoyed Bronn, the Bronn character on Game of Thrones, but I was even yelling, get him, at Danny and Drogon to the TV last night. I know everyone thinks Danny is going all Targaryen crazy, but as a woman who has sworn off this show and then reluctantly started watching again because of all the seemingly unnecessary rape, I was stoked. Plus, I don't know any woman over 25 who hasn't been called a crazy slash mean bitch just because she was a woman doing something a man would do. I realize it may not end well for the Dragon Queen, but I totally love this episode. I'd say this totally makes up for the lack of a battle scene at Highgarden. Side note, I really, really wanted to stop watching Game of Thrones last year when Ramsay Doggs killed his stepmom and her baby. That was just too much for the mama. But then I saw that you guys had a Game of Thrones podcast. I listened to the last podcast and met you guys in L.A. I listened and Jack actually made me giggle about the whole dog thing. So I continue to watch the show and listen to the podcast. Thanks for all the entertainment. So I'll see, Jack, you kept somebody in the game. I totally...
I get the big bucks.
Did not spell at the Game of Thrones names right, but it was just one nerd step too far to look them all up and type them correctly. Kelly D. Kelly, that's why we have Nick here on the show, to make sure we get all of our facts straight.
You know, the thing about you said about Danny and the dragon, the only thing I had a problem with is how does Danny stay on that dragon? The only thing, the whole time I'm like, she would fall off.
Fire and blood. I mean, it was. I mean, I loved the last scene because you do. You want to because you haven't seen any of this other than like when she let the slaves broke them and gave them their freedom. You haven't really seen the dragons really kill people yet like this, and so this is the first time you actually see a field of blood or a field of fire. You know, you're just like
killed some innocent people along the way, but
that's true.
Little boy and his sheep, right?
Did they? Oh, not in this.
That's
scene.
How. That's
Sorry.
How. Why she locked
yes,
them up?
Yes. 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 All right. This next email is from Harry. Questions, .. Hey there, fellas. Did anyone else laugh when Sir Bronn laughed at the name Dickon?
Yes, yes, we did. Of course.
We are all in junior high in terms of our maturity level. But more serious, when Arya said no one trained her, Littlefinger looked worried. Does he know about her training? And I can't remember, was he on her list? As we said earlier, he is not on the list. But... Nick, what do you think there? Does he know about her training?
No, I highly doubt it. Because, I mean, she was presumed dead, and no one knew where she was. Because she was just, she went to the Riverlands and then was in Braavos. So I think her reappearing is a shock to everyone, really. Actually, I'm surprised they didn't made that more of a point of, like, where the heck have you been?
Yeah. Well, I think Sansa does ask her that, but she says it's a long story. Like yours. It's a long story.
Yep. Long time.
And the episode was only 50 minutes, so they really didn't have time for that.
I can still remember
how
the music used to make me smile. All right. Last...
Jay, this podcast is going on long enough. We don't need your crappy singing.
Floggings abound. You are warned. Crackpot theory question mark. Making a prediction, Danny and John are going to bone, possibly in a cave. She's going to get pregs, and then they're going to go north and find out from Bran that they're related, and the baby will be the prince who was promised. Also, John definitely drew those cave drawings. Shout out to the writers for adding comedy to the story.
See?
I feel like a lot of people were thinking that, because just like it's just hitting us over the head, all right? He's just trying to win his case.
I'm waiting for the meme of like some Jon Snow cartoon or just him, where it's like I have something to show you, and then it's like just a crayon drawing on the wall.
little stick figure.
This was here, I swear.
It's been here the whole time.
Oh, man. All right, well, we have one phone call to get into. Let's jump into that right now.
Hey guys, this is Tom, and I'm calling from Michigan. Hi, Nick. And you other two. I'm just kidding. Hi, Jay. Oh my gosh. How many years have we been waiting to finally see some dragons and some Dothraki just going nuts and scaring the poop out of guys in armor? So I'm sitting here in my house, and I'm like, my jaw's hurting. Why is my jaw hurting so bad? Just because it's hanging wide open with all of the amazing awesomeness to get this far. So I don't know who you guys are pulling for even at this point, besides, you know, we definitely want the Witch King to go down. I get what that happens. But there was some part of me that was kind of wanting Jamie to go down, and I know I'm supposed to like him now. But when he starts charging at Danny, I don't know, did I want him to feel like the weight of you can't just charge a dragon? Like, you know, like I wanted the Lannister pride completely broken. Ooh, Lannister pride in their lines. So I don't know, that's just kind of what I was feeling, but oh my gosh. I remember right around season 5, I was like, I don't know if I can do this show anymore. You know, it was such a bummer to watch, and now I'm so glad I hung in there, and I'm glad I found you guys again, because I was a long time lost fan, of course, like everybody else, but gosh, glad I got buddies. Please help me figure out how to process all of the emotions that are happening right now. And I love you too, Jack. I just haven't fun with you. Bye, guys.
All right. Thank you for the call.
Yeah, I think you hit it exactly, Tom. I mean, this is one of the reasons why I love the episode, like I said earlier, is the fact that you don't know who to root for. And if they can make every episode like this to where you're seeing it from their points of view, I would love it. I think it would just end the show so great on a high note, and the fact that you're like, you want to root for Danny, you want to root for Jamie, and it's like, oh my god, I don't know who to pick, and you, that tension of just everything that, like, that's what made the last scene so good.
Well, at this point, what do you think? We wouldn't care if Cersei died.
No one cares about Cersei.
Littlefinger. I mean, so if there was a battle with that, would kill her, kill him. But like you said, with Jamie, Danny, Tyrion, all these, we don't want them to die.
Well, and that's what's and that's what's great about the books and the points of view, is that you understand their points of view, and that every person, no one knows they're a villain. I mean, maybe Cersei does, but like, I mean, no one in their own lives thinks themselves as mean. That you have your own reasons for your decisions, and you see that in the books of like why everyone's making their decisions. And
but even Cersei could make a case that she's had a rough.
Oh yeah, exactly. And that's the way she does, is that, you know, I was always, I mean, you see that with Sansa too. She's always been underestimated. She was always belittled because she's a woman, because she's so far down the line, you know, and that to her, all of her justifications are just because that's when she's like, oh, I'm finally getting the respect I deserve.
Well, right off the bat, she had to marry someone she didn't love, and he didn't love her.
Right.
Because her three kids have all been killed. One we were all cheering for, but the other two we liked. You know,
well,
so she's
killed one of them, in all fairness, kind of.
Well, it happens. But anyway, you know, she had to do the walk of shame. So she's been through a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
So she could make a case that, hey, I'm not really a villain.
I mean, yeah. And you don't really want to root against Jamie, because it's such a good redemption story in a way. And the fact that, you know, he was a prick, you know, in seasons 1 and 2 and even probably some of 3. But then being a prisoner with Brienne kind of gave him a change of heart, you know, his hand getting cut off, and now he's actually a good human being, but he still loves his sister, which is so strange, because it's like, wow, like you're doing the right thing for the most part now, but yet you still love this disease, as the Lord of Queen of Thorns said.
But true love is more powerful than anything else, right?
Well, eventually, to Nick's theory that, you know, he's going to kill Cersei, eventually that will break, right?
Well, maybe he kills her as a mercy kill.
It'll be the Queen Slayer.
Yeah.
That's just saying, he adds it to his title, King and Queen Slayer.
There you go.
But I mean, you got to think about it. Like, will he kill her out of mercy, or will he kill her because she orders something like the Mad King would do? Like, does she order the entire destruction of the city? You know, because that's why he killed the Mad King, is because he wanted the whole city burned to the ground.
Right.
And people, I'm not sure if that's a spoiler or not, but I don't know if they've shown that on the show, but that's why he did it, is because he wanted to spare the lives of all these people. And people, of course, people don't know that. They just assume, they just know that he killed the king.
Right.
And so Jaime is not a bad guy.
He just plays one on TV.
Right.
Well, thank you guys for your feedback. Always love getting feedback. A lot of good feedback this week. So let's keep it going. 385-309-0311, or give us an email. Game of Thrones podcast at gmail.com. Keep up the Jack hate. It's always fun.
I can take it. I guess I'm the one everyone wants to be killed.
I'm now the
Littlefinger of Cersei of this podcast.
I'd say you're more of a Cersei than a Littlefinger.
How did that happen? I mean, Jay's still on this podcast, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's a twist.
So how did that happen?
I had my redemption story, Jack.
Where? When was that? Was I absent that podcast?
Maybe.
Where your heart grew three times the size.
All right. It is now time. We usually happens in the book stays in the book, but we'll just call it ticked off Nick.
Actually, I don't really have
nothing
much. I got all my rants out,
okay,
and my theory. I don't really have a theory either because this episode didn't have a lot of plot. It was mostly action. But you know, I still kind of want to double down on my theory from last week, and that I think that because you saw it in this episode with Danny burning all the wheat, and that I think the people are going to start starving, and I think this is ultimately going to be Cersei's downfall. It's not going to be from Danny or anyone else. It's going to be from the people.
Couldn't Danny's side have used the wheat?
Yeah, no, that's what makes no sense either, because she even says that about how. Yeah. Her soldiers need cheese to feed her soldiers, and now Cersei's got the reach. And
that's where she sometimes overreacts.
Yeah. Well, no, but now if she can take over the reach by, you know, blowing out these armies, could she then start to harvest as well?
Well, I mean, I think that was the harvest.
That was the harvest.
Well, there'd be more harvest. Much,
I don't know.
And she didn't really take the reach, though, either. She just kind of took that. Because, like, they even said that, they made a note of that, saying that Jaime said that we're really spread thin right now because the majority of the forces are already in King's Landing, and they were just trying to hurry up what was the tail end of the column.
Maybe they should have started with the flogging, and they wouldn't have had this issue.
Well, yeah, exactly. Those guys should have moved a little faster. Bet you they regret it now.
Oh, man. All right. Well, if that is it, then that's it for this episode of Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. If you'd like to give us a call at 385-309-0311.
Call anytime.
Once again, it's 385-309-0311. Call anytime with the questions, comments, and or theories. Send an email to Game of Thrones Podcast at
gmail.com.
Once again, it's Game of Thrones Podcast at gmail.com.
Or join our Jack's Facebook group. Always right.
At facebook.com/group/JandJackGroup. We have a lot of fun TV show discussions, including our thread for the Game of Thrones each episode. Usually the day of, we'll post a thread up there, and that's where all of our live discussions happen on that page, as well as our polls for the verses for the Ramblecast, which this week I am winning again. It's like I'm flying on a Drogon, blowing away the competition with my fire from my breath.
With your hot air.
With my hot air. So enjoying the verses this week, from my perspective, I'm sorry.
Luckily your dice, you got the roll of the dice.
Well, that, and it, honestly, as long as Chris in Boston is picking a pick, I know I'm not going to be last. So,
his picks are getting worse.
It's like,
I think he got four votes.
Where did that pick come? I mean, like I said, I even asked, I said, oh, the thing, did you pay for these four votes? Seriously. I mean, that,
anyway, join our Facebook. I already said that. Sorry. You know, if you happen to get a sack of a bunch of gold, some say $600,000 worth of gold, you know where you could spend that is on Amazon. And if you do spend on Amazon, use jandjack.com/Amazon. When you do that, anything that you purchase, there will be a small percentage of that sale goes to the Jay and Jack Productions fold. So say if you can't contribute on the Patreon, but you do buy stuff that you need, it's a very easy way to help out as well. And the most
Amazon is so easy, too.
The easiest way to help out the show that doesn't cost anything, you don't have to buy anything, period, is to spread the word. If you enjoy this podcast, tell your friends. If they have friends, tell their friends to tell their friends.
Write us a review on iTunes.
If you don't have any friends, just tell people anyway, right?
Just tell people on the street.
Yeah. Hey, like I said, write us a review on iTunes.
Yep, that helps too.
Well, wait, a five-star.
Yeah.
I'll even take a four-star.
If you don't like Jack, I understand if you do a four. But.
Well, that you can call it in or write us in the criticisms. We'll take that too. All right, that is it for this week's show. Excited to talk. Only three episodes left, right, of Game of Thrones?
Man, that is a bummer.
Before you know it.
So excited to see what happens next week. I'm sure it'll be action-packed as well. We will talk to you guys afterwards. Until then, hasta luego and goodbye.
See ya.
Bye.